Welcome to another episode of Sea Control, your moment of PowerPoint rehab from the Center for International Maritime Security. As always, I am your host and president of SIMSEC, Matthew Hipple. Now, last week, NATO completed its 2015 Baltops exercise up in the Baltic Sea. We actually had the chance to talk to its NATO leadership, the U.S.'s Vice Admiral James Fogo, the U.K.'s Rear Admiral Tim Lowe, and Spain's Rear Admiral Juan Garat, to discuss the exercise's purpose, history, tested capabilities, and future. As an aside, while we're discussing simulated exercises this week, look forward next week to a full run of our past Falklands podcasts, as well as a new podcast or two. Now, we've figured out how to fix the feed. Some of you may have noticed how there's about 40 to 60 podcasts available now of our entire 82-episode run. And since we've had some requests, we thought we'd put them all into one block, side by side, so that our current and new listeners can enjoy. But back to the task at hand. For this week, we will return with the Admirals Fogo, Garat, and Howe right after this short break.
Do you like the Sea Control podcast? Sure, we all do. However, we're only a small sea in the ocean of content available to you, our dear listener, at the SIMSEC website. Sign up for a membership at www.cimsec.org/about/membership. China may have a 9-dash line, but our seas are clear, and we welcome your opinions and articles. Please take a moment while downloading this podcast to leave us a 5-star rating and a comment. We need them. Seriously, how do you think we pay this electric bill? Money?
And welcome back to another episode of the Sea Control Podcast. You are hearing this on Monday, and Baltops, the NATO Baltic Operations Exercise, has just completed. In its 43rd iteration since 1971, this is the largest Baltops in history. It's got 17 nations, 49 ships, over 5,600 troops, 61 aircraft, just an incredible number of nations and capabilities and personnel all being shown under the NATO flag. So it's an interesting and is an inspiring experience, as I'm sure our three guests will tell us today. So we have an international crowd here, of course, led by Vice Admiral Jamie Fogo, who is Commander Naval Striking and Support Forces NATO, and is also 6th Fleet. He is a friend of the podcast and has been with us before. We also have Rear Admiral Tim Lowe, Royal Navy, Deputy Commander, Naval Striking and Support Forces NATO, as well as Rear Admiral Juan Garat, Deputy Chief of Staff of Operations from Spain. And our plan here today during this podcast is to talk about Baltops, some of the capabilities that were shown, some of the stories, and really flesh out and make real for people what it is that was going on during this exercise. Make it far more than a headline, but make it something that fits into the bigger puzzle of the international system and kind of what the kind of operations that we do on a day-to-day basis. But before we get into that, as we always do, instead of me giving some sort of official bio and reading off the pages, I will let each one of our guests introduce themselves, tell us where they're from, and kind of flesh out for you, the audience, a little bit of their perspective so you can get a flavor of the kinds of folks that we're going to be talking to today. And Vice Admiral Jamie Fogo, as the friend of the podcast, having been with us before, and of course the leader of 6th Fleet and this Baltic operation, sir, I will open the floor to you first. Let the audience know a little bit of where you're from, where you're coming from, and kind of the experience that have flavored your perspective.
Okay, thanks a lot, Matt. It's an honor to be here with you, and I think an even greater honor to be the commander of Baltops 2015. In fact, we just finished the exercise a couple of hours ago, and we're headed into a hot wash-up in Kiel, Germany, which is interesting because you asked me about my background and my perspective, and I am very much a transatlanticist. I have a firm belief in NATO as an alliance, and I think that NATO is a very relevant and necessary organization in the 21st century as we face threats not only in Europe, but in many of the oceans and seas that are tangential to Europe. This is my sixth year on the continent in various assignments. My first time over here was as an Olmsted Scholar at the University of Strasbourg in France, and we've talked about some of those experiences before. And that was immediately after my first sea tour on a submarine. I'm a submariner by trade. And during that first tour and a couple of deployments, I had the opportunity to come into the Baltic Sea in 1985. And it was a different world back then. It was different and it was the same. Different because it was a bipolar world. And when we navigated through the Kattegat, Skagerrak, and Store belts into the Baltic, it was probably the most interesting navigation training a young junior officer could have. I tell everybody that I'll never forget it. It was primary OD on the bridge. We had two chain-smoking Danish pilots whose mantra was speed equals safety. So with the ferry boats crossing the channel at red, head full or all head flank to put distance between you and them as business went as usual and people had to go places and get there on time. And time was money. At any rate, we came into the Baltic Sea, and we were met by a whiskey-class diesel submarine on the bridge at dawn one day when I took the watch. And I don't think that that submarine realized that on the other side of the channel, there was a sturgeon-class submarine heading into far from arriving in port. And as they kind of woke up to that fact and saw our national ensign, they zipped around 180 degrees and gave chase. And we just, came up through a flank bell on the surface and decided it was discretion was the better part of valor, just get away from them before, there was any kind of interaction between us. And they faded off and went over the horizon. As we got closer to Germany, the East German patrol boats came out to greet us. At that time, of course, before 4 years before the wall came down, Germany was divided. And they were pretty aggressive in their maneuvering, and we were very circumspect about videotaping and stationing special detail on the bridge to make sure there were no untoward incidents. So at that time, NC was very important to us. We pulled into Kiel, and one of the things that the Germans, the West Germans, asked us to do was to put on our SDBs and go to the border in Lübeck, which is a beautiful city that I hope that the crew of San Antonio gets to enjoy while they're here. We went right up to the barbed wire and next to a bunker on the East German side of the border, and I'll never forget that there were voices in the bunker speaking German, and it was Warsaw Pact troops wanting to know if the West Germans would share with them some of the international soccer scores because they were deprived of any kind of information or fun kinds of things that, young people like to do. So an entirely different time back then. So here we are today, 2015, and that's been 30 years later. And the difference is that some of those Warsaw Pact members are now members of the alliance, and they're out here with us. The Baltic states, Poland, for example, Germany is no longer divided. They were an integral part of Fall Tops this year, and I think that's an important point to underscore. Back then, the Warsaw Pact was representative of the other side of bipolarity, led by the Soviet Union. We don't have the Soviet Union anymore, but we do have a very powerful Russia and a very professional and powerful Russian Federal Navy. And they are out here, too. And the geopolitical situation is tense, mostly as a result of what's transpired in Ukraine, but also in the Black Sea and in the Baltic Sea. And so the presence of Russian forces is not unexpected, and it was routine. They did come out. They wanted to see what we were doing, and I think that's a good thing because if I were a Russian pilot flying over the formation of 49 NATO ships, it looked like the flotilla that would never end. So I think we sent a very strong message of reassurance to our allies and partners, especially in the Baltic region. We sent a message of unity of purpose, unity of command, solidarity in the alliance, and the very fact that we could get underway on day one and conduct a photo exercise with 49 ships is indicative that we are interoperable as alliance and partner members of NATO. I'm going to leave it right there with one last anecdote that's rather humorous, and that is the photo X was for us and our 49 ships, but after we took the photo, we actually counted 52 because there were two Russian corvettes flanking either side of the formation and an AGI in the background. And you know, they wanted to come out and see what was going on too. So let me turn over to my my good friends Rear Admiral Juan Garat and Rear Admiral Tim Lowe, and let them talk to you about their experiences and background and you know, what they've done here in Vol Tops with Strike Force NATO. Juan.
Thank you, sir. Good morning. I'm Rear Admiral Juan Garat, Spanish Navy, and Vicos Ops in Strike Force NATO. Unfortunately, for December, I have to come back to Spain, so and to work in a much more boring activity, more bureaucratic. My job in Strike Force NATO is very exciting, it's very operational, I'm enjoying it very much. I'm dealing in very my daily job, coordinating the efforts of the Intel division, operations, policy, plans and policy, exercises, and civil and military cooperation. During exercises and operations, exercises like Power Tops, my job is to all the operational tactical activities of all the force. As you can imagine, after almost 3 years in Strike Force NATO, coming back to Madrid will be much different from what I'm doing now. The exercise is been a very complex exercise, and it's very, very challenging in terms of the number of activities that we plan for the training audience, basically our NATO units and partners participating. We are dealing with exercises in different areas covering all types of warfare, including anti-submarine, anti-surface, anti-air, and with an emphasis in amphibious operations and marine warfare operations. In my background, I was a specialist in communications and marine warfare as well, and in tactical action officer. I was the CEO of three ships. I was the commander of the squadron of frigates, and also was the commander of the UNAFOR, which is the task force that you organized for the counter-piracy mission in Somalia during 2009. So as you see, most of my life has been at sea. I'm really enjoying the exercise. It's a great opportunity to provide the training that our units and partners need. We are, we provided a good training, and we set up a very robust team as XCOM to create a scenario that was challenging for them. Injected a lot of simulated interference from the potential threat, which was in the context of a crisis, value to the operations. It is not just fighting, but training the audience to understand the situation in which they need to take into account all the reactions in a comprehensive way, so not just fighting, but considering all the potential and all the circumstances that are around an exercise and a person in a crisis environment. So I want to finalize, appreciating this time just to expose and to explain what we're doing at this. Thank you.
Excellent. And go ahead.
Sorry, hi, Tim Lowe. Thanks very much indeed for inviting me on today. I'm a Rear Admiral in the Royal Navy. Just a second. You can tell we're at sea. I'm a Rear Admiral in the Royal Navy, an anti-surface and anti-submarine warfare officer by trade, and also a specialist navigator. This is my 34th year wearing the Queen's uniform. I took over in September 2012 as the Deputy Commander of Striking and Support Forces, MATO. Regrettably, rather like Juan, I'm coming to the end of my tenure, and I actually hand over the reins to my relief in just over 2 weeks' time. So Borsops for me has been particularly poignant. My last time at sea doing anything operational in the Royal Navy. I've been lucky enough to have 4 seagoing command appointments. I've had 2 fairly high-profile operation appointments, the one with Strike for NATO at the moment, working for Admiral Fogo, and two of his predecessors, Admiral Davidson and Admiral Bandolf. And I was also very fortunate to work out in the Middle East as the Deputy Commander of the Combined Maritime Force, working for Admiral Gortney. In fact, when Juan was chasing pirates at sea, I was doing the coordination ashore as the Deputy Commander of a 26-nation coalition working in the interests of security and freedom of navigation in that region. I've also had 1 shore command, a training command, and indeed my last job before coming to Strike for NATO was as the Deputy Flag Officer Sea Training, responsible for all surface and submarine and personnel training in the Royal Navy. So in some ways, looking at Baltos this year, I was coming back to my roots as we took on pulling the exercise together. But sort of reflecting a little bit on what Admiral Fogo mentioned about his first experiences in the Baltic, I too first came into the Baltic in 1985 as a junior officer. And I can remember it very well. We were shadowing a ship from the Warsaw Pact, and we came in. It was cold, it was misty, it was the middle of winter, it was very dark, and it felt suspicious, it felt uncertain. You were on constant vigilance. It wasn't frightening, but it was certainly unsettling as you sort of entered into this area where the Warsaw Pact were very, very firmly ensconced in the Baltic region. I've then been back on Baltops many times. In fact, this is my 6th Baltops. And reflecting on the last 2 weeks and what I've seen, what a different atmosphere. It's very open. We've been operating in a very transparent environment. It feels friendly. There's huge camaraderie between the Baltic nations that have been taking part in the exercise. The 17 nations that we've been operating with. You could argue, given the multinational flavor of the Strike for NATO staff, that it's actually 22 nations, because Spain did not have a ship here, but we had a Rear Admiral who was our DCOS Ops, and we had a number of other of our staff from the Mediterranean region. But it has certainly felt very positive. Going back to 1985, in those days, the reasons that those 2 chain-smoking Danish pilots were speeding up and slowing down so rapidly was because the channels we were allowed to operate in were so narrow. The area was still heavily mined due to the sort of political circumstances at the time. The mines hadn't been cleared from the Second World War, and obviously there were more modern mines there as well. So you were confined to very narrow channels and about a mile wide, and there were lots of routes that you had to follow. We've mentioned this year that we've been doing a lot of mine countermeasures work. In fact, almost half the force were mine countermeasures vessels. And they've been using remote-controlled underwater vehicles, autonomous underwater vehicles, surface drones doing mine sweeping. We had mine drops from US B-52 aircraft. And indeed, the Standing NATO Maritime Group, the MCM group, that were part of the force before, that joined the force before the exercise, were operating off Estonia. And they found literally hundreds of old mines. I think the statistics, and Admiral Fogo will correct me if I'm wrong, is there something like 80,000 undetected mines still in the Baltic region. he's a phenomenal figure. But there's a lot of work to do to clear those minds. In fact, talking to some of the divers yesterday, we had our Distinguished Visitors Day yesterday for the exercise, and we were ashore, and there was a demonstration by some of the diving teams, the explosive ordnance and demolition teams. And I was talking to a young lady from Norway. She was a young lieutenant heading up one of those dive teams, and she was telling me that they'd found some live ordnance. They'd also done some mine detonations. And in fact, only yesterday there were two mine detonations for practice. We saw some photographs of them this morning. Quite impressive. So the MCM piece has been a big part of the Borsos exercise. And again, reflecting back to 1985, where as a junior officer, I was petrified that I was going to come off the nav track and there was going to be a big bang. Luckily now, we don't have that to worry about, thanks in part to the huge work that's been done by NATO and by the Baltic nations and by other and by our allies and partners in helping to clear the sea lanes and ensure freedom of navigation in the Baltic region. Matt, back over to you.
That is a stunning statistic and a great picture of some of the counter-mine operations done by NATO. I do remember I was at Ball Tops in 2012, and it was the weather was about 3 foot visibility, so I was slightly less worried about mines as I was about hitting some random sailboat. But I thank you for that statistic. Next time I go to Ball Tops, I'll now have 80,000 undetected mines to worry about. So that's a level of comfort. But it does also remind me that I have to apologize that you gentlemen will not be in Kiel during both Fleet Week and the World Cup. We did that in 2012, and I tell you what, that city exploded. Really, the end of Ball Tops, ending it in Kiel is really a fantastic event. But to come back to some of that discussion about Admiral Lowe and Admiral Fogo, you had spoken about the different kind of environment and how what Ball Tops felt like and was about during the Cold War and what it feels like today. And you've spoken to some of those capabilities, talking about using the UUVs, talking about mine sweeping, talking about using the B-52s to deploy quick strike mines. What are the main thrusts of the capabilities we're pursuing today? So Ball Tops is now, as you describe it, less a demonstration in a political contest and more a demonstration to ourselves of interoperability and capability. What are some of those other areas? There was an amphibious assault done in Poland, and maybe you could flesh out some of that, what you consider it, what kind of enemy you were planning against. Do you see it more as an amphibious raid or as a full-blown assault? Sort of flesh out for us a few of those other exercises and ways that we've demonstrated capabilities and our interoperability to the alliance during Ball Tops.
Yeah, let me start and turn over to Admiral Lowe for follow-up on this. Great question, Matt. And if you were in Ball Tops in 2012, then you'll remember that was the last year that the Russian Navy actually participated.
Yes, absolutely.
In an LSD out there. Fought it back in 2013, chose not to come, and now, obviously, as a result of the geopolitical situation, they are not part of Ball Tops. So that's an interesting dynamic and an interesting change. There were a number of different missions and functions in naval warfare that were demonstrated during Ball Tops. Maritime interdiction operations was a big part of what we did. Admiral Lowe talked about mine countermeasures, and that in the broader context of anti-access area denial. In order to conduct an amphibious landing, you have to get the connectors to the beach. Obviously, you can't get the connectors to the beach if there are mines in the way. So for the better part of a week, we conducted mine clearance operations in the vicinity of Lutska Range, wonderful range to operate on. We also, as a precursor and a practice, conducted an amphibious landing 1 week prior to the demo yesterday in Ravlunda, Sweden, which is another wonderful range and a wonderful training opportunity for the Marines. So, of course, we demonstrated Navy and Marine Corps interoperability by conducting an amphibious landing. And, you know, when you said, hey, was this a raid? Was it a full-blown assault force? One of the ways I like to look at it is it was an amphibious landing, and in our scenario, in our NATO scenario, because we had a training scenario, it was to provide support and defense and liberate a country that had been invaded. And that's really, throughout history, if you look back on Incheon and places like Iwo Jima, that's when we conduct amphibious landings. We go into places that have been overrun by folks that are not on our side. So we were demonstrating our ability to be interoperable with the Marines. 700 Marines, as a matter of fact, Swedes, Finns, U.S. Marines, Royal Marines, in conjunction with an airborne assault on the airfield in Utska by the 173rd Brigade Combat Team. And those guys were out here at sea with us planning, and they did an outstanding job and liberated the airfield before the amphibious assault force came ashore in the morning. We also demonstrated, you know, if you have to conduct an amphibious landing, you got to make sure that artillery pieces and integrated air defenses are taken out, that you have both mastery of the littoral as well as the skies. So strike operations were included as part of both ops. If you're going to do strike operations with aircraft, including Apache helicopters and pointy nose jets, you're going to need to be able to do combat search and rescue. We tested that. If you're going to be operating from a sea base, you've got to defend the sea base from the air. So we did air defense exercises, and we were extremely fortunate this year to have a Polish submarine, diesel electric submarine, the Polish submarine Condor, which is about 50 years old. Those guys went to sea and did a remarkable job. And in talking to some of our ASW experts out there, because I've done battlefield circulation as Admiral Lowe has all week, everybody was very impressed with how quiet that platform was and how professional it was. So to have the submarine in the area and to be able to train in ASW and prosecute that contact was invaluable to the alliance. And last thing I'll say before turning it over to Admiral Lowe is about 6 months ago, before I came into the job, I went to Riga, Latvia to participate in a tabletop exercise, which had a scenario very similar to this, called Steadfast Pinnacle. And there were about 30, 33 officers from alliance and partner nations. The DSAC Europe, the Deputy Supreme Allied Commander of Europe, was there. Very impressive officer named General Sir Adrian Bradshaw. He's a special forces guy. He's also a helicopter pilot, but an Army guy. And I went up to talk to him, and I said, hey, sir, I'm heading to 6th Fleet Strike Force NATO. What do you think I could do to enhance the quality of work in the maritime domain? And he said, well, I'm not a naval officer. And I said, well, I know that, but in your role as DSAC, you're the one who fulfills or solicits the ships from NATO nations that have navies in the Combined Joint Statement of Requirements, the CJSOR. So it's NATO's version of the GFN, the gift map, the Global Force Management Process. And he said, okay, well, what you can do to help me is instead of conducting exercises that are simple and rudimentary, you can do something complex at sea, something that will attract allies and partners to come. You know, it's like Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And I said, all right. And I got to Strike Force NATO, and I started talking to Admiral Lowe and Admiral Garrett about Baltops. I said, this is exactly what the alliance needs to do to attract nations and partners who want to really conduct a robust maritime exercise at sea. No place better to do it than the Baltic. And so as we went through the planning process, three different planning conferences in a year, in the making, people got really excited about this, and we started to see more and more nations contribute capability and come online. Hence, in the end game, 49 ships, 61 aircraft, actually 52, because we had a B-22 involved yesterday. It was phenomenal, and 5,600 people. So over to Admiral Lowe for comments on that as well. Sir.
Admiral, thank you. What a great segue. the Admiral's just been talking about the capabilities that we brought to bear, and I think the big thing for Borthok this year, and certainly as I sort of headed up and gave direction on the planning for the exercise, I wanted to make sure that we really did test ourselves operating in some complex warfare environments. I don't need to tell you, Matt, as the next naval officer, that you know the Navy constantly operates in at least four domains. We operate on the water, we operate above the water in the air, and we operate under the water. And, of course, the cyberspace is absolutely critical to the way we do our operations now. We're networked, we're connected, we communicate significantly in a very different way to the way we did when I first came into the Baltic in 1985. And we tend to sort of do exercises in stovepipe domains. So it might be some anti-submarine warfare, we might do some anti-air warfare. The mine countermeasures vessels will go away and do their own thing off the beach or in a creating a queue route for us to follow. The air guys will go and do their thing. But what we were determined to do this year and what we really wanted to try and exploit was actually doing all those things together, increasing the complexity and really teasing and testing. Because to my mind, it's about people. It's about us understanding how our compatriots work, understanding their techniques, their tactics, their procedures, working together and enabling the NATO and the Maritime Alliance by understanding what people do and how we do our business. Showing the kit that we have, allowing people to experience the development that individual nations have made, sharing that, looking at it, critiquing it, making suggestions and taking suggestions away as to perhaps how that kit could be utilized in different ways. The great thing about many of our neighbors is we've invested quite rightly in high-end capabilities. And those high-end capabilities give you lots of flexibility and lots of opportunity to be innovative in how you use those capabilities and how you exploit the capabilities that our governments have provided to us. The Admiral mentioned the V-22 that was here yesterday. What an amazing aircraft. A great capability. And from an amphibious operations perspective, it's actually totally changed the map. You know, we can now project power with a V-22. You can project inland up to 600 kilometers. You're no longer looking at that coastal fringe. You don't have to be right on the beach to deliver effect from the maritime. You've got carrier strike groups. You've now got the amphibious element that can launch with a V-22. There are huge, huge advantages, much better capability now. But when it comes down to it, all that capability, all that kit, still relies on the people themselves. The Admiral mentioned Ravalunda, the range in Sweden, where luckily for us, we only had a few days of mist. It wasn't like in 2012, but I do remember some bull tops where I was steaming around in fog for a long, long time. But Ravalunda was a wonderful day. The amphibious forces came ashore. That was impressive on itself. But for me, one of the most impressive things I saw was at the end of one of the firing exercises, at the end of one of the serials, standing under a tree, a large Scandinavian pine tree just behind the beach on the range, was a bunch of Marines. And it was Swedish Marines. It was Finnish Marines. It was US Marines. And they're all standing there together. They were talking. They were chatting. They were laughing. They were talking about their kit. They were ribbing each other about their performance on the firing range and the fact that one of them had fallen into the water as they came ashore and got soaked. But it was that sense of camaraderie, that sense of understanding, that bonding that really brings our alliance and partners together that, for me, really shone through in that one sort of little snapshot of working together. But, of course, it's not all about the amphibious piece. We've had ships out in the deeper water. We've very much tried to bring in a hybrid concept into this year's Borthok. Both in the maritime with small boat attacks. In the scenario, we had a terrorist organization that were giving us problems. They were state-sponsored. They were giving us some challenges. On the land, we had some little green men running around who we weren't quite sure who they belonged to. And in the air, we were practicing various techniques to deal with a terrorist airborne threat. So we're trying to bring all these different challenges and scenarios into one exercise so that we really do maximize the training opportunities. And when it comes down to it, nations come to these exercises to get training. And our aim at Strike for NATO this year was to give them the best training possible. And I very much hope that we did that.
That leads to an excellent segue, I think, to the further point, which is you've talked about how trying to stretch these capabilities, try to attack your force with a number of different challenges that maybe don't have compatible solutions. You've got hybrid, conventional, terrorist forces. You have forces that are kind of on, like you said, the little green men that are on the fence. You don't know who they are or kind of what their business is about. Within all of this, you've mentioned trying to understand, critique, and find opportunities. Perhaps, gentlemen, some of you may want to talk to particular moments. So we heard about those Marines there on the beach, and I thought that was very illustrative of trying to build that camaraderie and interoperability of understanding. Are there some other examples of either unique moments, lessons learned, sort of critiquing ourselves, saying something we could do better on, surprises, unique moments that you think, like that moment on the beach, but in a more operational sense, illustrate some of the use and the learning that we're getting out of the ball tops?
Yeah, let me offer something and then turn over to Juan for any comment from him as Deputy Chief of Staff for Operations. Admiral Lowe mentioned Marines on the beach. General Breedlove, the commander, was here yesterday, and he observed the entire amphibious landing with probably 74 or 75 other distinguished visitors. We had three lifts, three helicopters of 25 each out to USS San Antonio. That included the Polish defense minister, the Swedish defense minister, the state secretary for defense, the Honorable Mr. Fallon from the United Kingdom, essentially the minister of defense for the United Kingdom, and an entourage of other general officers and senior defense officials from all the partner countries and the allies that participated. And General Breedlove said many things, but one of the things he said to me was, you know, throughout the day when I met people on the ship and on the beach, I did not hear the words, and of course he is a NATO officer, dual-hatted like I am, UCOM and SAC here, I am 6 Fleet, and but I didn't hear the term United States Marine Corps. What I did hear was Marines, plural. Finns, Swedes, Royal Marines, and American Marines working together. Incredible camaraderie, incredible interoperability, lots of different vehicles, different kinds of connectors. But when it comes right down to it, Matt, the Poles had the Lublin-class amphibious assault ships here. They put what ostensibly is a duck in those vehicles and delivered Finnish Marines ashore. The Finns took the lead on the amphibious landing and amphibious invasion yesterday. That's extraordinary as a non-NATO member, but a partner nation of NATO, along with the Swedes, who hit the beach in the first wave. And as these teams came together, they got to know each other. And here's the anecdote that I think you'll enjoy and that your listenership will enjoy. You know, we had all these Swedes and Finns and Marines and Royal Marines together here on the San Antonio. And there are some interesting traditions that carry over from one Marine Corps to another. Of course, our Marines, the time-honored motto that you hear all the time, Semper Fi. Well, for the Swedes, when they say it fast, you have to ask them to say it slow to repeat it, but it's in English, Thor Leaf. And they bellow it out just like Semper Fi. It's the son of Thor. And that's their mantra. That's their slogan, their logo. They carry with them a series of guidons for each of the units that is a double-headed, very sharp axe. And we had the Secretary of the Navy, Secretary Mavis, on board, And I told him about that guidon from the Swedish Marines, the double-headed axe, and he said, really? And I said, sure, so we'll arrange for you to see it. So we brought one of the Swedish Marines, who was a guidon carrier, down, and when asked, why do you have this double-headed axe? He said, well, that's for when we run out of ammunition. And he posed for a picture with the secretary and his platoon commander. I said, well, what's his name? He goes, well, you know, his name is such and such, but we call him 125 kilograms of love. This guy was about 6'6", 6'7". No kidding. He weighed 125 kilograms, 125 pounds times 2.2. And they had a wrestling contest here on San Antonio with all the Marines of all the nations. And no surprise, 125 kilograms of love beat everybody. He was unstoppable. And everybody kind of adopted a mutual respect for one another. And these are the relationships that go from the lance corporals to the colonels that will be enduring for as long as these guys are in the service. And it may just so happen that one day they are fighting alongside one another. And because they know one another, they've already formed those bonds of trust. And that makes them a more effective fighting force. But let me ask Admiral Garrosh for any similar observations on his part. Anything you all want.
Yeah, I this, in this exercise, an aspect which is new for us, is the first time that the Strike Unito has conducted an exercise of this. It was a great experience, not only during the planning phase we needed to work in the details of the exercise, and we have a very good exercise division to do that, but also during the execution of the exercise. For us, it was a real opportunity to test our procedures, our capabilities, our ability to deploy quickly to any platform in a very short time. We did on board San Antonio, which is an but it's not the one we are used to go. It's normally the Mount Winnie. So for us, I think we proved our ability to deploy quickly in any platform, even if it's not a perfect command platform, but just to be able to start from the very beginning. I would say the next day we embarked, the staff embarked in Virginia. And the following day, we were at sea and just operating as normal. Obviously, the normal problems that we have in communications with other ships. It was a challenge, obviously, when we start at sea with all the 15-minute units to communicate. Obviously, the better the training the units are, the less communications you need. But at the beginning of any operation, you need communications. It was a challenge, but we were able to tackle with this, and we were able to communicate. We were able to train, to work as staff at sea in a very short notice. So I think it's an aspect that should be highlighted as it is just our main characteristics to be a high-ranking reporters, the personal reporters.
And Matt, it's Tim Lowe. If I could just sort of pick up that segue on communications. I think there are two things sort of that operationally played out for me in the exercise. One was absolutely that communications challenge. And I think that for some of the, I'll term it the higher-end navies, those that have invested significantly in the sort of the network-centric style approach to warfare, United States, United Kingdom, some of the bigger NATO countries, I think sometimes we forget that there's good old-fashioned UHF, HF out there. And that for a lot of nations, that's still the backbone of how they do their communicating. So for us, learning to use all the capabilities available to us. Admiral Fogo has mentioned a number of times, flashing light, flags, bridge-to-bridge, HF, UHF, in terms of being able to sort of deliver your message. It's not as easy when you're operating in a multinational force of just sending an email or sitting in a chat room and sending out a couple of notes. But I think the thing that really brings us together, and Admiral Fogo mentioned earlier on the very large-scale formation we achieved with all the ships on day one. The fact that we were able to do that on day one is because operating together, given the Alliance's history and how long we've existed, is in our maritime DNA. It's already there. And I think us as the new generation, as we look at the new generation coming on, as the old guys, I'm at sea for the last time in my naval career, it's up to us to make sure that we bring that and deliver that to the younger generation so it hits their DNA as well, and it's not just confined to us as we move away. So for me, I think the big thing is about learning. It's about understanding what you're doing and not just then recording a lesson, but actually dissecting that lesson, working out what it really meant, drilling to the depth of what happened and why it happened and what you can and how you can do it better. Okay, it's about being a learning organization. It's about delivering as an organization that is constantly critiquing itself, constantly evaluating itself, and constantly looking for ways to improve and move forward. And that's how we approach Fortops this year. And I hope, and we'll find out on Saturday when we have our post-exercise discussion with the 49 ships that took part, I hope that's what we delivered for them, and we'll be able to take away and feed into next year's Bulltops, an even better Bulltops, a more complex Bulltops, a more challenging Bulltops, so we constantly build on our capabilities, our interoperability, and our ability to work together.
We've discussed Bulltops, we've discussed some of that learning, we've discussed the exercise itself, some of your observations from the different exercises over the past several days. So let's take a step back. And what does this bode for the rest of NATO's exercises? We're discussing a more complicated environment. We're trying to get a more holistic look at our capabilities when faced with multiple threats like that would exist in a real environment. There'll never be a singular type of threat. They'll come at you from multiple angles and from multiple domains and different styles. What is this? Is this something that we're going to push into other NATO exercises and expand upon? What does this Bulltops reflect about the tenor and the flow of what NATO exercises will look like in the future?
Well, I think, Samuel Fogo, that Bulltops has set a Bulltops 2015 has set a new standard for future Bulltops and for other NATO exercises. Like I said in the beginning, the geopolitical situation in the Mediterranean, Black Sea, Baltic Sea, North Atlantic is somewhat tense right now as a result of Ukraine. One of the things that we wanted to do, and one of our main purposes here, was to provide reassurance to members of the Baltic Sea region, Alliance members and partners, that we are here for them as an alliance with 14 other alliance partners and three other partnership nations. And I think that sent a very strong signal. And the intent of that signal was for other Baltic nations that may not have participated in the exercise to know that we're here, to know that we have unity of command, and to know that we'll be here for our partners and friends when they need us. But at the same time, we took kind of a dual-track approach here. And I'll tell you one thing, and then I'll turn over to my counterparts here to wrap up, because I'm going to have to run. I have another phone call to make. But this is dual-track in that while we had these 49 ships, 62 aircraft, and 5,600 people up here with a preponderance of force, showing that we can do all these different kinds of naval missions, we engaged in a dialogue down in my headquarters in Naples with the Russian Federal Navy midweek, mid-Bulltops, over the Ink Sea Agreement, which has been around since 1972, about as long as Bulltops has been around, 1 year less. And so I think this demonstrates a point that I'd like to drive home with your listenership, and that is The Navy is not just about combat power. The Navy, or navies, especially in this case, 12 different navies participating, is all about an extension of the arm of diplomacy. So we can have dialogue in one part of the region, and we can have a very forthright and robust naval exercise in another part of the region. And so we're sending a couple of messages. One is that we are ready to defend our partners and friends, and the other is we're not interested in any kind of conflict or any kind of mistakes or miscalculations that might lead to something worse in the maritime domain. And so we were doing both at the same time, and I think that portends very well for navies and the navies of NATO. Let me excuse myself here, Matt. It's been great talking to you. And if Admiral Garat and Admiral Lowe want to add anything, I'll let them wrap up as I go on to my next event here.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, the floor is open.
Yeah, one aspect that I'd like to mention is that the Bartok Zero has been linked with to another exercises just to combine the message that to strengthen the message that we want to send. So this year the exercise has been executed at the same time with all exercises under what is called the Allied Shield, that with the purpose of sending strong message to the Russians. So I think it would be NATO is doing an effort in this direction, trying to combine exercises and to even national exercises within the NATO program of exercises. Different way for future, just trying to reinforce the training activities at the same time, sending the message of commitment and resolve.
Hi, Matt. If I can come in there, Tim Lowe again. I think we're seeing within NATO now a really renewed vigor for improving our exercise capabilities and the way we operate together and enhance our capabilities. Later this year, the Alliance is going to be holding a very large LIVEX, Trident Juncture 15, where we're going to be operating across at least three nations that I can bring off the top of my head, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, with forces spread across Spain and Portugal, air forces based in Italy, and a very large maritime force, including amphibious and strike capabilities at sea, operating together to deliver that better interoperability again. So I think we're going to see more and more of that, and trying to link exercises when we can, where it makes sense, to tease and test the ability to operate in others' domains, to what I term flatten the battle space, a single battle space as opposed to a joint battle space made up of individual domains. So rather than having a maritime, a land, and an air domain, a single battle space that we're operating in. That's certainly something that I strive to do in our sort of joint role as a headquarters. But when it comes down to the bottom line, it doesn't matter what the exercise we're doing, the fundamental aim for doing any of the exercises is because we're maritime professionals, we're working together to enhance, secure, and hopefully deliver peaceful operations in the world's navigable waterways and waterways connected with the high seas.
So, gentlemen, we have, or rather than we, you have all so generously let us go over the time limit here, so I'll bring us up to sort of some closing thoughts. I'll open the floor to general topics. This can be anything from where you think the NATO alliance is going into the future, an anecdote that you haven't mentioned so far but you'd like to bring to the table, all the way to during ball tops, when you weren't on the bridge or you weren't in the op center. If you're reading a good book, we'll listen to that too. So this is a free form. Anything you want to close up with, anything you want to tell our listeners?
I think for me, something that I've learned in my 34 years is don't ignore history. You ignore history at your peril. Sometimes we do things for very good reason. Progress doesn't necessarily mean you have to reinvent the wheel. Actually, look at why things have been done. Sometimes it's time to change, but other times our forebears perhaps knew something that we didn't know. I think all too often we tend to try and take decisions and make decisions based on too little information. So for me, it's going back to history. In fact, the book I'm reading at the moment is a book about the history of the United Kingdom. It's written in a rather amusing way, but actually it tells the story of the UK. And as I've been reading it and reading about some of the challenges the UK faced in the Middle Ages, my word, there's some resonance now to some of the challenges we face in the world today. The only problem today is there's far more technology available to allow that to expand. It's easier to send messages out. So I think for me, my comment would be, don't ignore history. If something happens, get a history buff to have a good look into the books, into the archives, and see whether or not it's there. I certainly remember in a previous role when I was working in SHAPE as the XO, the Principal Staff Officer to the Deputy Supreme Allied Commander Europe a few years ago. In the vault, I discovered copies of Monty's diaries. Field Marshal Montgomery, who was the first Peace Sacker, diaries that he'd written about his interactions at SHAPE with the North Atlantic Council, with the military committee. And it was really quite poignant that a lot of the things he was talking about, we were still seeing. I think that's it from us. We unfortunately have also got another appointment to head off to. So, Matt, thanks very much indeed for your indulgence. I hope we haven't bored your listeners and the team too
No,
much.
Absolutely not. This has been a pleasure.
Okay. Take care. Thanks very much indeed. That's us out.
Absolutely. And Admiral Garrett, you have the final word.
Thank you. I think following the comments from Admiral Long, history teaches us a lot of things. Would you summarize saying that training, and more training is essential. So we may have new systems, but we still need to train new crews to improve our interoperability, our proficiency, and always adding to this, obviously, in this particular part of history, to demonstrate what we are able to do, to demonstrate our resolve, our capabilities, and to send the right message to those whom are observing us working, exercising, training in the Baltics.
Absolutely. And with that, Admiral, I guess it is you and I closing out the podcast. I got to thank you and, of course, for our listeners, the other flags, Admiral Fogo and Admiral Lowe, that were here today. And Admiral Garrett, you for, of course, staying with us until the end. This has been the Sea Control Podcast. And for the past almost hour, you've been listening to in-depth details about the Baltic operations for 2015. And we'll hear from you next week.